are here with Rabbi Dr. Aaron Rakefet, who has been our scholar in residence for this entire weekend. And it's just been a delight, as always, as was expected. We are thankful to the Zeifman family for bringing Rabbi Rakefet to our community. And Rabbi Rakefet, you have addressed a number of very important issues over the weekend. And I just wanted to ask you, in a general sense, you have a panoramic view of North American Jewry and Israeli Jewry over the last 50, 60 years, ever since you got smicha from yeshiva and then subsequently made aliyah. And you've been an educator all of this time, and you've seen our children come to Eretz Yisrael and receive education. Can you tell us a little bit of your reflections about the evolution of North American Jewry over the last 50 or 60 years?
Well, this is why I end every talk. If you noticed yesterday, you were watching the clock. I was also watching the clock. I went a minute and a half overtime. But I held on to your hand, and it wouldn't end until I ended on a positive note. Lahadil Torah Lahadira. And look, I grew up... Let me begin at the beginning, and you see the whole picture. I was a kid in public school. My parents were part of that generation that I believe his name is Nachmanson, the present president of the OU, and the last Jewish Action wrote a beautiful article of what people thought Orthodox Jewry was in the 1940s when he was growing up. And we were part of that crowd. No one had a concept of halacha. Everyone worked Shabbos. My grandfather made Kiddush. I went to shul with my grandfather, not my father yet. And I was in public school for 1 year. I was a wild kid, and the teacher told my mother, your son is too bright for the Irish kids, the Italian kids, because we lived in a mixed neighborhood in the Bronx. Send him to a day school. Minashamayim Zikuni, I was fortunate enough that the only day school in the Bronx was five little blocks from my house, Yeshiva, Rabbeinu, Yisrael, Salanta. Little did I dream one day that I would get the only smicha a direct Talmud of Rabbi Yisrael Salanta gave in America, adding to my YU smicha. So, you know, you entered the yeshiva. It was beyond words. I can tell you a siyam of a very distinguished Hasidic rabbinic family, could have been a Rebbe himself, would teach kids for Bar Mitzvah and Shabbos, open the chumash, and the kid would put the $2 into the chumash, and he would close it on the $2. And understand, this was the level of observance. America changed for many reasons. First of all, there was a hardcore that did observe, as you know, where my classmate, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, Professor Chaim Soloveitchik, wrote a very seminal article, Rupture and Reconstruction. Professor Mark Steiner wanted me to write a rebuttal that there were Jews who remained from this period, because Chaim Leach with the impression there was no one. I don't get involved in writing rebuttals. I don't have time to have machlokes. But both are right. Chaim is correct. 90%, 95% were not observant. Then there was a small amount that were. What changed life for me in particular, and I'm not talking about the survivors who came to America and all the rabbeim, but one individual, Sempo Suki Hara, Zeichet Tzadik Livracha. He saved the Mira Yeshiva. And in seventh grade, I had Reb Geshen Yankelevich as a Rebbe. And here we're faced with a Rebbe who doesn't speak a word of English, and we kids don't speak a word of Yiddish, and yet our hearts met. And Reb Geshen and Reb Henech Fishman in eighth grade, and what happened afterwards, it lit a fire. And the world has changed distinctively. Shmirat Shabbat is widespread today. Kashrut is a pleasure today compared to what was. When I was growing up, I don't remember one pretzel being kosher. Hmm. And you would see the kids eating pretzels, you would think, oh, that Tam Gan Eden was in a pretzel. Today I have a different problem. The OU became Machmir, and all their pretzels are OUD, if you've noticed. At least in the New York area, you can go out of your mind, OUD, OUD. You got to bring Israeli pretzels with you to be able to have a power of a pretzel. They're doing that because they understand the utensils are kosher in between the runs, and they find that you can't do a perfect kashering in a massive plant, so to play safe and not be samach on kulot or beinu ben yoma, whatever you could depend upon halachically, they say oh, you did. So there's been this big, tremendous change. On the other hand, North American Jewry and Israeli Jewry for that matter, because the world is a village, because we're so successful today, our children and our grandchildren go out into the big world. And they're confronted by the ideas that are considered up to date today, modern, sophisticated. And this impacts upon Torah Hashem, Tamima. We don't have to go any further than feminism. Feminism begins in the 60s into the 70s. Moria Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik already was dealing with it in the 70s. And I remember the Rav saying that the fact that women can't be witnesses is not that they're held in any less regard than a male. Moshe v'Aaron can't be witnesses together either. And we're talking Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron HaKohen. But God has a distinctive plan for each sex, the male and the female. There's a difference psychologically, emotionally, physically, biologically. This struggle we still have today, and even greater than ever. And I don't want to elaborate further, but you all know that over 200 people signed on to a letter generated by someone who studied with me. Today he's on the Chovevei Torah faculty on our attitude towards same-sex homosexuality has to be different. And I myself met with a very prominent person who's also my student. I don't win the battle with all my students. I'm happy to say Rov Banayach, but I haven't yet achieved Kol Banayach, unfortunately. But then again, any great rabbi I know of hasn't achieved Kol Banayach at this moment in time, before Mashiach Tzidkenu. And I had a whole discussion with a Talmud of mine, who also studied with Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik. And a lovely human being in a Talmud Chacham. And he tells me, no, we have to be in favor of same-sex marriages. Legally, we can't do it halachically, but we have to acknowledge it legally. And, we're like coming from two different worlds. So on one hand, Torah is all over, people are learning, Daf Yomi is all over. On the other hand, we have a conflict that hits my face, I would say daily, of this ongoing conflict. The Western world, the Western values.
Social issues.
And we as Jews, as Torah Jews, do we go on the offensive, the defensive? How do we reach out? How do we explain? And I just want to tell you, I've spoken all over the world. I have taught all over the world. I've been all the way down in Cairns, the end of the world in Australia, where you fall off into the water, and maybe they'll pick you up in Japan, Melbourne, whatever city you want to mention, South Africa, all over England, the United States, Canada, all over Israel. Thanks to the Israeli army, I've been in Lebanon, I've been in parts of Syria, giving shayurim. That was my role in the army. After the big battles, when the soldiers have a chance to catch their breath, you come in with the rabbinate, and we give lectures, we have a whole choir, we put on a whole performance. And twice I've been interrupted in the middle of speaking, once in Minneapolis and once in Boca Raton, by feminists who are angry at me because I differed, let's say, with Rabbi Rachman on retroactive annulment of marriage. Mm-hmm. I've differed with Rabbi Krause's proposal called Zikui HaGet, that the Beit Din can give a get instead of a man. And it's overwhelming to me, because what I'm saying is not extreme. I'm far from being an extremist. But someone who knows halacha, you have to, moments like this, steps like this, you have to know what you're doing. You're dealing here with the heart of halacha, the heart of Devar Hashem.
Right.
And twice I've been cut off. Once maybe 15 years ago, and once recently.
Well, Rabbi Rakefet, I mean, you're touching on something that I think is worthy of sort of considering. You know, civilizations rise and fall. nations have golden ages and then they have their ages of decline. You lived through the ascent and the rise of the golden age of North American Jewry. Would you say that we're therefore now on the decline?
No, I don't think we're on the decline. With you, in the state of Israel today, we have over 2 million Shomrei Shabbos, real Shomrei Shabbos. I'm not talking about, you know, the latest survey showed traditional Jews, well over 70%. It showed in terms of Yom Kippur, fasting, I think it was 86%.
No, I'm talking about the Jews of North America.
1 second. I'm talking Israel. North America, you are not where Israel is, but you are doing fabulous, okay? Come on, let's, we get the finest of North America in Israel. I use the expression, Trumat Maisrat, because my children are angry at me, my grandchildren, what are you wasting your time in America, Canada? How many people, my children are big Zionists, Kanaim Hara, all of them, my grandchildren, they gotta come in Aliyah. I say, look, Aliyah is a process, but we get the Trumat Maisrat. But I see from my students, the rabbinate, what has happened here. Listen, take Lubavitch. Take a simple example. I saw the Rebbe. I have a, if you've heard my recent lectures, I'm in the middle of a whole series on the Rebbe. So people wonder, Lubavitchers dance around me. They can't believe our Litva can give these lectures with such clarity and fairness and insight. But I had direct periscope into the Rebbe, my best friend, he's no longer alive, Rabbi Dr. Professor Tzvi Groner, recognized the name, it's Label's nephew. So we had a periscope, he's a cousin to Rebbe, he used to eat lunch with the Rebbe when he was in BTA, he'd walk over to 770, Label would spread him out on the table with Alan Dershowitz, and the Rebbe would walk in from the next office and talk with these little kids in learning and what was the shiur today, and the Rebbe would astound them no matter what they learned, he knew it all by heart. But you take Lubavitch, how Lubavitch began, you know, no one realizes that. You had a few hundred, then you had a few thousand. Take a look today, so many years after the Rebbe's death, look how many people have become Shomer Torah Mitzvah through that concept of not giving up on any Jew. So that's one aspect. Look at Lakewood. I learned in Lakewood, and I spoke about it Shabbat. I was privileged when I learned in Lakewood. It was not American, it was Lithuanian, and it helped me immensely in understanding the world I was coming from. And a good deal of my 7 books, of my scholarship, of my lectures, go back to that experience in Lakewood. Today, Lakewood is thousands upon thousands of students. It may be many yeshiva under one roof. And Lakewood is more financially solvent, I'm told, than Yeshiva University. Now, you just think what I just said. 50 years ago, Lakewood, Mori Urebi, Rav Soloveitchik, helped Lakewood survive after Reb Aaron died. Are you aware of that? When Reb Aaron died, Lakewood, he went in for Reb Shnur, raised money in Moria, kept Lakewood on the map. Today, YU, it's just the opposite. YU could use Aaron Cutler, who's the, I told the admittance, he's a financial genius. YU could use Aaron Cutler's help in solving their financial problems. So, you know, you can go right up and down the line. On the other hand, I have to admit, and I've said this 1,001 times to my students, I'm accused of having an attitude that I have my point of view and everyone else is also is entitled to their point of view. I will never be negative, I'll never criticize unless you break the halacha. And I always say, if one system could show me 99% success, I would say that's the hashkafa. But we all have our problems. We all have kids who leave. And this hurts because we have good melamdim today and we understand the mentality and we reach out and we have endless sfarim and we have emotion and yet we have a percentage of youngsters who leave the fold. And this is across the board. I don't tell you with Satmar, the book I quoted, the Shabbos Unorthodox. I read that book. I couldn't believe what I'm reading. The woman is sitting in a car reading a novel while her husband thinks she's going to mikvah. I mean, where are we at? And the percentage of fall away kids who had the finest chinuch, the finest education. So this troubles me greatly. I believe in Israel the fallaway is a little less percentage-wise. It's also a problem. You take Beit Shemesh. How many fine families have children who have cast it away?
No.
No, I hope some will come back. I hope we can inspire. I hope my students can inspire. But great achievement, we're not there yet.
Do you have any suggestions, recommendations, what adjustments need to be made in order to stop the fall off, as you say?
Well, I'm a Litvak. And it took me a long time to appreciate the fact we need emotion. And I have to say, and I've said this more than once, if a young man picks up Hasidut and learns a little, warms the heart, I'm all for it. There has to be that additional hue, that additional level of emotion, of warmth, of understanding, of commitment. The Rav always used the words, we have to teach our youngsters the romance of being a good Jew. I refer to that on Shabbat. That's part of it. I can tell a story about the Rav. I actually published it, and I think it's in the second volume of my work on my Rebbe, the Rav, The World of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik. But the story I heard from the Rav, I heard it via, and I heard it from the person actually involved, Rabbi Menachem Ganak, who I called the Tsar of Kashrut. I mean, what he has done for Kashrut. This man deserves the Nobel Prize for helping Jews have kosher food all over the world, basically. So Menachem I know very well. You know, I remember him as a kid in the Bronx, and I remember his sister, and he's a Litvak. His roots are Litvish, but the Rav, and you know, as I said in Shabbat, but the Rav was exposed to more than just the Litvish world. And in the late 60s, when he started, after his wife died, he was very lonely during the summer. And some saintly people, the Feuerstein family in Brookline, felt the only way to make the Rav happy would be to bring up students from New York and have them teach. And those are the famous summer sessions. I think it began in 69. I don't believe it began in 68, but I believe it began in 69, and it continued well through many years in the 70s. And some of the best kids out of New York would come up to Boston, sit on the lawn in Brookline on a sunny day, and the Rav would give shiur, pick a masechet that you generally didn't study in the yeshiva, like Kritut. He taught one summer. So, I think it was 69. The Rav felt his students don't have a warm enough heart. You got to warm up their hearts with Yiddishkeit. It's not enough to learn and be a Litvish Talmud Chacham. And he decided to teach Likutei HaTorah of the Tzemach Tzedek. If I'm going back to the first Lubavitcher Rebbe and afterwards and the Divrei Hashkafa, the Tzemach Tzedek, the Likutei Torah from the Alter Rebbe, and he decided to teach Mamish a shiur, to give a shiur, and they found out in advance, and Menachem Ganak led the rebellion that, and he could get away with it because his uncle. I'm going back in history. I'll give you a little bit of history now. When the Rav decided to go to Berlin, the Rav had to leave Poland. He had started university in Poland. See, no one realizes this. He already was in the Polish Free University. Polish Free University, and he was studying law. And then he got the draft started pressing down, and they were worried he'd be drafted to the Polish army, so he had to leave Poland. Then he decided to go to Berlin. It was a great attraction, as we mentioned over Shabbat, all the Gedolei Israel who wound up in Berlin at this time. So Reb Moshe was his father, Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, was very apprehensive. His son should go to Berlin. Who knows what will become of him? So an elder student of Reb Moshe, Genachovsky, that's Genak, it's Genak's uncle, I think his name is Moshe Chaim, whatever, later becomes a Chavir Knesset of Maftal in Israel, Mizrahi. Reb Moshe, and he was a number of years older than the Rav, Reb Moshe says, you'll take care of my son, you'll take charge of my son, and they went to Berlin together, they roomed together. This is Menachem's uncle. So Menachem had an in with the Rav. He just was in the Talmud. This was the Rav's best friend's nephew. So Menachem leads the rebellion. So the next day, the Rav is giving shiur, and at the end of shiur, he says, well, boys, I want to tell you a story of a Hasidic Rebbe. He tells the story of this Volozhin yeshiva student. It's a famous Haskalah story. Volozhin yeshiva student who was pumping fun of the Hasidim, and he wanted to see what a Rebbe is like. So he told about the Bialo Rebbe. So he goes to the Bialo Rebbe. It's the middle of winter in Russia. Snow all over. And he comes into the Rebbe, and they're singing and trinkt avachayim and varmkeit and a verbringen and different tyre and different chassidus, and suddenly outside the snow disappears, the trees are all green, the branches are green, the birds are chirping and singing, and suddenly the Volozhin Talmid Gittav Kook gives a look on his watch and he gives a clap. Time to daven mincha. And at that moment, the bird stops singing. The tree turns back to ice. The leaves fall off. The snow is all over. And the Rav turns to get back and he says, Menachem, that is you. You follow? I wanted to teach Likutei HaTorah and you brought back the winter. So we have to, there has to be varmkeit, there has to be dedication. And above all, there have to be examples. I need not tell you with the slew of scandals that we have had recently. I have no words. I often say in class, I look, because in my classroom there are two elements. They're the students studying for smicha, you know, well, the real students in their 20s and early 30s. And then I have a lot of outsiders sitting in who have, some of them are world famous, rabbanim, professors, world famous in their field, but they're old, they're retired. And they come to shiur every week, some of them coming, one of them, Rabbi Reuben, who everyone thinks is a conservative rabbi because he's always challenging me, and he has, whenever I'll try to explain the Haredim, he'll go after me, you know, with the Satmaruv, and the three oats, the Gemara in Ketuvah, you know, you hear someone yelling from the back, so wherever I go, people ask me, is Rabbi Reuben Orthodox? Baruch Hashem, he did a big mitzvah this year. I actually had him speak, to tell the class what he did. It was written up in the Israeli papers. So I said, let you see what he's with, the true value of Rabbi Yitzchak Reuben. But the older people, I don't have to give mitzvah to, but my students, I say, if you have any sexual problems, don't go into the rabbinic, don't go into chinuch, become an accountant and sit and work with numbers, but don't work with human beings. Mm-hmm. So you see, you need rebbeim, you need rebbeim. And this, of course, comes back to the old problem. Do we pay our rebbeim properly? Do we accord them a lifestyle? In other words, a bright fella can get smicha, many students get, and then they go on to become medical doctors, lawyers, dentists. You follow? Without a good rebbe, we have no future. The Rav used to say that the Melamed is more than the king, more than the high priest, and the Rav in his beautiful language, more than a warlord. That's the Rav's word, the Rebbe. There's more to it too. And again, here I'm not an expert on what's going on in America, but I'll give you an example in Israel. And Rabban Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, was involved in this. How do you make Gemara attractive to a high school kid? You see, this is a kid comes in today to Yeshiva Tichoniyot, let's say, in Israel. Has a nice general education. And the Gemara appears to him to be so ancient. How do you turn it into a life situation? How do you How do you get him excited? How do you put that fire into him? And here I have to say, you don't realize the depth of what I was saying, that Rabarin was considered an outsider. You know, and what does it mean an outsider? He didn't grow up, he wasn't part of Gush Emunim, he was not a right-winger politically. He was an outsider. the heart of religious Zionism
today. You're referring
today,
to Rav Aaron Lichtenstein.
Yeah, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, of course. The heart of religious Zionism today are the people who are at the Sebastia Railroad Station in the mid-70s, if you recall what I'm saying, the start of the settlement in Shomron. Chevron Lever, Rav Moshe Levinger, who just passed away, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha. And here's Rav Aaron, an outsider, coming in to the Hesder Yeshiva, and slowly but surely, Alon Shvot, Haretzion, becomes the largest Hesder Yeshiva in the state of Israel. Tremendous impact. He has many Talmidim, and they have gone out and established other Hesder Yeshiva. And there's a brand there, there's a fire, it attracts. In addition, they've given additional courses. In other words, it's not just Gemara. You have a lot more than Gemara to choose from. There has very unique courses in Chumash and Mefarshim, in Nach. And this has had a greater attraction than just Gemara only. And this is an ongoing challenge, how to get the kids excited. I, on a personal level, and I apologize for telling you this because I don't like to talk about myself, but I can tell you, after I started, you know, I was appointed to the Reitz faculty in 1962 by Rav Shmuel, by Dr. Belton, the second president of Yeshiva, and of course the Rav played a role in it. I'm sure he didn't appoint me without consulting the Rav. And then I meet Rebbe a few years later, and Rebbe says to me, I hear very good reports about you. I wonder why. And he says to me, you can teach at Teisvas, and the boys are excited. And that's the secret. A Rebbe has to be alive. Lebedik. Bring it to life. Bring it down to their level. But bring it to life. But it has to be a Rebbe who's a tzaddik. And it's not, this is what we spoke about. Where did I say? Oh, I spoke about it Thursday night when I, yes, when I spoke on a Rebbe. And there's so much to say on this topic. I hope I've inspired Rebbeim. I've had a lot of success all the years I'm in Israel. Kanayin Har, I can give a whole list of Talmidim I taught who hold key roles today in teaching in the rabbinate in Israel. And Baruch Hashem, we've done a lot of good. So I have to be positive. We've come a long way since I was a kid entering Solanta in the early 40s. Have we come far enough? Not until Mashiach is here. But Baruch Hashem. Finally, I just want to tell you, if you want to know what life is about, I daven in a Kalta Litvische shul in Israel called the Ohel Rivka, Rehov Chalap. It's the oldest synagogue in Kiryat Shmuel, which is the part of Rechavia that was built to be from. Because Rechavia was built to get away from the Yishuv HaYashan. All the professors and the Yekis who came in the 30s, and you barely had a shul there. I mean, it's amazing what was. Kiryat Shmuel was the other side of Rehov Aza that was already, Ettinger built it, Zichrono Levi, I knew him yet. That's for the old Yerushalmi, and we can be firm, and old Rivka. Rav Kook came to the corner lane ceremony, their pictures up. Oh, today it's all one Rechavia. Anyone who's not Shem Shabbos has to be insane to buy in, because your neighbors are going to look down upon you. As Ruth Keshen said when she turned 90, this old Yerushalmi said, I never thought I'd live to see the day in Rechavia when people look down upon me because I drive on Shabbos. That's a grace of Chachma that she said. A cousin of us apologized to me because I lit off a little stage. So that's your fault, it's your cousin. So I davened an old Rivka. Been davening there for 46, 47 years now. Shabbos morning, first minyan, 6:30, fabulous minyan, and that way I've gone through Shas already. I'm going through the third time on the Seder, because I am making Kiddush by 8 o'clock, and no one can, my wife goes to shul, and no one can bother me. It's a pleasure. No, I come into shul. Sitting right next to me is a guy named Monty Nussbaum. We're davening together 46. Monty Nussbaum was the kid 1 year ahead of me in Solanta who opened the door and welcomed me into Solanta and taught me the ropes. Two seats, two rows in front of me is a kid named Danny Rosenthal. He was in Chinuch in America. in America many years. King Aliyah, maybe 10, 15 years ago, was in Chinuch, was in Prince, an Elich Mensch. Danny drove the Rav to my wedding with Sadei Kedushin. He was one of the few kids that had a jalopy. He had a wealthy grandfather. He had a jalopy. So I walk in. I tell you, it's unbelievable. Here is Monty, here is Danny. Go and dream where we'd wind up. And periodically, endless tourists come into the shul. This one I taught 50 years ago. This one I taught 45 years ago. It's just amazing, Yerushalayim. The other part of the story is even more amazing. This shul was founded cold, cold, litvish. No one spoke to each other. You came in, you davened, you walked out. The shul is for davening. Nothing here in Israel, in Canada, in America, anywhere in the world, you need a shul to it's an embassy of the Torah people to remind you you're Jewish. So everything has to center around the shul. In Israel, you pay taxes in Hebrew, you curse in Hebrew, the newspapers are in Hebrew, you understand? You don't need anything to remind you you're Jewish. Shul is for davening. I knew all the founders. Unfortunately, none of them are alive. Hildesheim, Katz and Nellenbogen, very famous families. All right. Today in the shtibble on the side of the shul, Shabbos morning, there's a 6:30 minyan, an 8:15 minyan in the big shul. And in the little shtibble, either 9:30 or 10 o'clock, who can believe it, a Chabad minyan. And when I come back from Mincha, let's say now it's 1:30, I always peek in to see what's doing in the shtibble. And it's a sight to see. The table is covered with food. Mifabreng. It's fabreng in a hitvadud. And an elder, a chabatnik there, the hadras panim, is teaching Likutei Torah, what the Rav didn't want to teach. And they're sitting there, the Kedusha, the Tahara. This too shows you the change. And just think for a minute that in the state of Israel today, by official law of the Knesset, when a young man turns 18, with the Haredi now it's 21, but the Supreme Court is going to rule on it if it's democratic or Jewish, he can go into the army, he can do public service, Shemit Lumi, or he can go on shlichut for Chabad, be a shaluach anywhere in the world, and that counts in lieu of army service.
Wow.
And you saw with Chabad, with the Nepal, the tragedy now when we left it there, a multi-million dollar field hospital. They said it was more advanced than their own hospitals. And did you see who went from Israel? Many of the doctors with kippot, women with kisui rosh, and they said we couldn't have accomplished what we did without the Chabad shluchim there. It went hand in hand. The Israeli military medical delegation and the Chabad. So you see, we're making progress. But nevertheless, the B'nai Korach is still around. As I said, we have to deal with that. And it's... imagine, the guy's name was Gabaz, a singer Gabaz, and he attacked, he went crazy. It cost the Herzog, I wouldn't say, it may not have cost them the election, but it cost them dearly. And he attacked the Menashkei Mezuzot, the ones who kissed the Mezuzot, go with Kamiot and go to Kivrei Tzadikim. And the hundreds of thousands of people applauded. You understand the world in which they're living? So as I said, since then I'm more mocked that I'm kissing on my sister. Although never when I went to yeshiva, I cannot tell you what happened to a student kissing my sister walking into Rabbi Ruchim Yerelik's class.
Well, Rabbi Rakefet, I want to thank you again for being here for the weekend and for sharing so much of your wisdom and experience with us. For those who are watching, they can get thousands of hours of shiurim on yutorah.org, and that's all for free. And we thank you.
I want to caution them because if I would show you all the letters that are coming to YU, if you latch on to Aaron Rakefet, you may have to take off 49 years. And just sit and learn. So they should be aware that there's good things on the YU Torah, but there's a liability too. So I'll be Ezrat Hashem, and I'm not the only one. They can actually learn your Adaya of David Miller from the Kollel, his Shurma, fabulous. And you have in YU Torah, you have to give credit to the Katz family of Mexico City. It's endowed by them, and we're not allowed to give shiur without a recording being made. In other words, I was criticized in Ami, I don't know if you're aware, but they criticized me because I have too many followers in the Haredi world, and they're worried I'm having some influence. So I can understand from their point of view, someone like Rakefet has influence with his broadness, and it's not good. But when you talk about yutorah.org, it's all there. Chinam ein kesef. And the rabbi's absolutely right. It's a great gift to the Jewish people.
As are you, Rabbi Rakefet. Thank you very much, and we look forward to your next visit.